Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So how's it going? What's interesting? What's coming up? Major events in your life. 15th. What's on the 15th?
First prototype.
How many of you have set appointments with your course coordinator for the hardware demos on the 15th? Not too many. Okay, so you need to get that done this week. How many of you met with your advisors last week? Oh, that's not bad. How many of you are meeting with your advisors, have a regularly scheduled meeting every week? Good. Excellent. All right, so that's good progress. Is that helpful? That's good. I'm really pleased to see that. That's really good progress. Are there any issues we need to discuss, lab access or anything like that? So what should we talk about today? How's life? My life's good. No, I asked that because I'm curious.
18th century Eastern philosophy.
I'm curious what, from your point of view, what are the challenges you're facing right now in senior design two?
Maintaining sanity.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. Maintaining sanity. How so?
Stand up, Tom.
We can't hear you. I mean, with the prototyping and everything, it's almost impossible to juggle all the time.
Yeah, that's a problem. I recognize that's a problem. But, what I've been telling students lately when I advise them is that, if you're taking more than about 14 hours a semester, you shouldn't be working. When students tell me they want to work 15, 20 hours a week, I usually want to see them taking 12, 13 hours max. And typically when students take senior design, they have reduced loads because senior design is pretty intensive. So I know that's a problem. But it's also, one way around that problem is to make sure that all four members on your team are contributing. And that's traditionally not always the case with teams. So we try to help you work through that. Another way that you deal with that is through scheduling, making sure everybody's got schedules, everybody's sticking to schedules when they're going to be in the lab and things like that. So what else? What other issues? Those are good issues. Those are very real issues. What's the single biggest goal in your in your sights right now?
Getting a job.
Okay, so I think the career fair is next week, is it? Okay, so we have one of our classes. I think it's the 2 weeks from now will be canceled, so you can attend the career fair.
Yeah, that's not going to be an engineering specific.
No, that'll, from what I understand, that'll just be university wide.
Okay. Now, is there anything in the works for an engineering career fair?
I haven't heard anything yet. I haven't heard anything yet for the spring. Unfortunately. Okay, so we've got sanity, getting a job. What else?
How do we get the prototype done to get a good grade?
How do you get the prototype done? So what are you going to do? What are you going to do 2 weeks from now when you show this to your course coordinator? What's the plan?
Workable system.
So what? You're just going to wheel this out in the cart and say, "There it is."
Demonstrate.
Walk up to the system designer.
show it doesn't work.
And then the same.
Somebody mentioned, you know, getting a good grade. How do you get a good grade on a, on something like what's coming up on the 15th? This is another aspect of engineering, which you're actually on the other side of this now, and you're not really thinking about this. Someone had a hand up? Well, what would be the safest way to maximize your grade on when you do your hardware prototype?
Document.
Even before documentation. What did we do when we set design constraints? Why did we set design constraints? In the bigger picture, why were we setting design constraints? Because these become your major design goals, right? The thing you're going to build has to meet these constraints. And once we all agree on those constraints, that's a safety measure for you, because if you walk in at the end of the semester and say, well, you see here, we've met our design constraints, it's pretty hard for us not to give you a good grade on that project, because we've agreed on those expectations. So tell me about the 15th. If you want to maximize your grade on the 15th, what should you be doing?
Demonstrate you kept them in mind.
How many of you have a clear idea of what your course coordinator is looking for on the 15th? How do you have that?
He sent
you an email. Pretty long email, right? And he said, I want to see this, and this.
Possibly it came from you.
No, actually, it came from him. That was Dr. Higgins' message. He's in the bag. I was very impressed with it. I wish I would have written such a nice message. Why did he do that?
Give us a direction.
He wants to make sure you understand what his requirements are. So what most of you haven't done for the 15th, and I understand as students you're not used to doing this, but when you get into industry, you will do this. The first step is to understand what the requirements are. You need to be talking to your course coordinators, asking them, what do you expect us to show on the 15th? This is how you maximize grades, if you haven't figured this out through all the courses you've dealt with, is you need to figure out what the instructor's looking for, and then you figure out how you're going to apply your effort against those goals. So you need to manage expectations. You need to understand what the requirements are when you go in on the 15th. And one of the course coordinators has done a really good job of that. I think more than likely your other course coordinators will probably do something similar very soon. But I would encourage you to talk to your course coordinators and understand exactly what they're looking for. That's perfectly legitimate. And then you can tailor your presentation. So what you should be doing is, in addition to showing, you shouldn't, of course, just wheel your hardware out and say, this is it. You should have a canned presentation of your hardware that hits on all the major design issues and things like that. Use this as your chance to really show off what you've done in the way of the evidence of design, in the way of engineering content. Don't just show them the thing. Explain how you've engineered the thing, and the choices you've made, and those kinds of issues. Okay? So that's a little bit about 2 weeks from now. So what I wanted to talk about today, I wanted to revisit a topic which we had a lot of trouble with last semester, which is problem decomposition. What is the document you generated to show us that you adequately understood your project in terms of its overall system?
Problem description.
No.
Approach.
No.
Diagram.
It's the block diagram, right, or system diagram. And a lot of you struggled with this, so I wanted to talk a little bit about that today, because that's really essential to the way you're going to develop and articulate your project. So what are the different types of projects that we have in this class? How would we cluster these? If you look at all the different projects going on, they generally fall into about two to three to four areas. Let's talk more about system or end product. So give me a first type of project.
Mechanical.
What?
Mechanical.
Not by discipline, by scope.
Consumer oriented.
Concept.
Research.
Research, is that what I heard? Yes. We definitely have a few projects that are research. What are characteristic of research projects?
Something a consumer wouldn't care to use.
No. How do you tell a research project? No, certainly no productized hardware. Usually research projects are more about trying to determine feasibility. So you may build a prototype, you may build a testing rig or something, but you're not going to necessarily build a project. So we certainly have some research projects. That's one good group. Second group, the most obvious group. The ones that everyone keeps telling me, your whole course focuses on this.
Competition?
No. Well, competitions is actually sort of another class.
Product development,
right? The gadget builders. Certainly the gadget builders fit very nicely with a lot of what we talk about in this course because those are projects which sort of have a clear beginning and a clear end. Other types of projects. We talked about concept. Very similar to that. We have some projects whose output is not necessarily a product, but something else.
Demonstration?
No. What? Where are concrete teams? Raise your hands. So what's a little different about your projects? What's the output of your projects? What's the end result from your project? It's not really a block of concrete, right? It's more about the process, right? It's more about how the process of creating this concrete, right? And we have a few other projects that fall in that category that they're focused on the process, understanding the process to achieve some result. Now, all these different kinds of projects, you know, the argument last semester was you can't ask us to do a block diagram for some of these projects, but what is the block diagram really all about? Why is that such an integral part of the senior design process? It decomposes your bigger project into smaller pieces. And why is that critical to your success in senior design?
So you understand all the pieces that are necessary?
No. Well, that's true, but let's more immediate.
So you attribute resources to
what?
Assign tasks.
Why? Very, very good. Why?
So everybody would be accountable for a specific problem and can say.
Close. More important than that. We talked about this first semester.
Working in parallel,
thank you. I was talking about the same topic to Senior Design 1 Tuesday, and I was explaining that, and I said the same thing last semester, that if you take all of your tasks and line them up sequentially, how long is your project going to take to get done?
3 years.
About 3 or 4 years, literally. I mean, you just cannot do these projects sequentially. How do you go about taking a project like that and making it run in a shorter amount of time? This is something you'll have to do in industry or when you get a real job, is you'll always be asked, how can you accelerate progress by doing more and more things in parallel? There's generally two things you can do to make a project run faster. You can spend more money and do more things in parallel. So the block diagram becomes key because it begins to give structure to your project so you can assign tasks and figure out what things are in parallel you can do in parallel and how you can sequence these things. What's the fancy term we use for that? I gave a lecture on it last semester that I'm sure everyone forgot.
Multitasking.
No. And I know no one reads the syllabus either, so. Because that was about far enough down on the syllabus that you stopped reading by then. So you got to learn some of this project management lingo or people aren't going to take you seriously.
Pipeline?
Nope. Similar concept. What are some of our project management terms that we've used in this class? I think that explains that GRE score.
Oh,
oh,
that's harsh.
Oh, come on.
We talked about work breakdown structure last semester, right? And work breakdown structure is one of the terms that people use to describe this process of assigning, basically building something like a Microsoft project schedule, breaking down tasks and such. So what I wanted to talk about today a little bit was how we go about this process of decomposing your problem. And I've linked from the syllabus a few slides, a few nice presentations on this concept. This comes from a presentation given at Clemson and talks about the different ways you can decompose a problem. So what I thought would be interesting to do today was to pick a project and actually work through some of these tasks. So this is the list of Senior Design 1 projects this semester. And in Senior Design 1 this week, we picked the Senior Design 2 project and did the same thing. So which one should we pick? We've got automatic guitar tuning. We've got strength and leachability of slag cement. We have pedestrian footbridge, capturing energy from a vehicle using a fluid-filled surface, mixing efficiency in the Taylor, I don't even know how to pronounce that word, Coyette, Stokes flow, inerter development for Formula SAE, and Nova Thermal Energy. Let's not pick number 5 because I know very little about that. It's a little too deep into chemical mixtures and thermo and all that. And we can't pick the ECE project or I'm going to get written up on my student evaluation. So
find the concrete one.
So what should we pick? Consensus? SAE?
Yeah. Pedestrian footbridge.
How many people want pedestrian footbridge? SAE. Whoa, that's not much.
They're very vocal.
That a lot of people didn't vote.
Try the guitar tuning. I'm sure you'll get good response.
It's what? Pedestrian footbridge is it's an interesting project. And actually, it'll probably be good because that doesn't lend itself, you could say, to a block diagram as well as a guitar tuner. So that's a good. Let's pick pedestrian footbridge. Okay, so let's take a moment, and I'm sorry about that's going to be really small. Is there some way? Okay, is that better? So take a moment and let's please read the abstract. And then what I'd like to do is to talk about some of the major pieces of this project and the process about in which we can uncover those things. Is it a good abstract? If you're grading this abstract, what grade would you give it?
B plus.
B plus? I actually haven't read this one in detail. So what's the project about? What's the main goal of the project? To design a footbridge that sits in the Cecil B. Moore Broad Street intersection and allows people to walk in any direction. So this is a good project to talk about problem decomposition, because I'm sure some of you are thinking, well, we just have to design the thing. There's no subtasks. So when we begin this process of developing a system diagram, what are some of the things we should initially think about?
Feasibility.
Even before those things. Well, not so much, and I'm talking more specifically about how we're actually going to execute this project or how the system is going to function. Not so much about project management issues.
How valuable will it be?
What?
What is the value of that?
No, more specific. We're talking about a block diagram now. We're not talking about project management or things like that. We actually want to now sit down and write the block diagram. Materials are close. In any block diagram, what are the first things you look for? What? No? In terms of this block diagram is a picture that's going to allow you to understand this project in its entirety. At least from a function, how the system works or how the process works. So when you want to do that, what are some of the first things you look for? What are some of the first things you have to account for in a block diagram? Okay, so that's why we're having trouble. You know, I mean, and I think we need to work. That's why we need to talk about these things. So typically, in any kind of a project, one of your first levels of concerns are going to be, what are the inputs and what are the outputs? Because those impact people and those consume resources. Now, when we talk about this footbridge problem is interesting, because there's really, you could think of sort of two processes here. There's the process of actually designing the bridge. How do you go about as a team designing a bridge? And there's a model of how the bridge actually works. Let's talk first about the model of how the bridge actually works, and let's talk about how we might actually build that model, because that gives me a chance to plug MATLAB. And then we'll talk about the other stuff. So this bridge is a machine. It's a structure that's going to function a certain way. And if this bridge doesn't function properly, what's going to happen? Well, last semester, I think we shared some videos of bridges collapsing and all these cool things, right? And there have been a lot of situations over the years where bridges have been improperly designed and they've collapsed. And that's something that you want to avoid at all costs. How are we going to avoid that?
Over-design.
How are we going to avoid building this thing and watching it collapse in front of our eyes as we cut the ribbon on opening day? Simulation, thank you. If you design this bridge, you know, with any decent architectural firm or engineering firm, you're going to have an entire end-to-end simulation of this bridge that you can simulate foot traffic, you can simulate loading, you can simulate just about anything. So what's that simulation going to look like? What type of tools might you use to do this simulation?
There's
a few nice modeling tools out there that will let you draw the bridge and then actually load it with forces and such. It's not inconceivable that you would actually build a piece of this in MATLAB if you wanted to understand how this bridge responds under structures, under loading and such, and vibrations and things. But in any of these tools, you're going to end up with a working simulation. Well, what are some of the things you're going to want to do to that simulation? Well, there's going to be inputs and outputs on that simulation. What are some of the inputs going to be if you want to test the design of this bridge? What are some of the conditions you're going to want to vary to get an accurate assessment of how this bridge is going to function? Vibration. So how are we going to induce vibration? How might you do... And what types of things are going to cause it to shake? What?
Wind loads.
Good. There's a good input. The wind speed. Wind direction. We'll get to that. This is being built on top of a subway. We're actually talking about that, and that's an interesting twist. There's loading like snow. What are some of the other ways the bridges get loaded? People, right? Now, you will eventually, when you get out into environments where they have really good tools for this, you will encounter tools that allow them to do these kinds of simulations. You can actually, if you were pitching this design to the customer, you might even show an animation of people walking across the bridge. All this kind of stuff can be simulated today. You can simulate loading conditions for traffic and all these kinds of things. But you're certainly going to want to look at how many people can be on the bridge simultaneously, what kind of load that's going to induce, what the wind speeds are, what the weather conditions are, because that's going to influence the flexibility of the bridge and such. So those are some of the things that I would expect to see as inputs to your model of how this bridge works. What are some of the other inputs to this model of the bridge? What are some of the things this team is going to have to think about in terms of its design? Things that are going to affect the actual performance of the bridge, not project management issues. Materials, right. One of the things they're grappling with right now is the type of concrete or steel that they're going to use for this bridge.
Efficiency.
So you would expect the design tool to be able to comprehend that in the block diagram to draw that out and show that some of the inputs are choices like concrete or steel reinforced concrete or cast concrete, I think is what one of the things they're talking about. Other kinds of inputs. The footprint, the geographic location of the bridge, why is that going to be important in this particular project, sitting on at this intersection? What's one of the challenges? And they're literally going to build this bridge is going to look like a four, it's going to have four pieces, one on each corner, and then walkways that are going to converge in the middle. Like what? The subway. So we were talking about that on Tuesday after class, that where they drive pylons to support this thing is going to depend on the subway. Are they going to let them just build it on top of the subway, or are they going to have to drive down to the ground beneath the subway? And obviously you can't drive a pillar right through the subway tracks because the train people would get pretty upset with that. Now, what is going to be a large factor in determining that?
Actually, where the subway tunnel is.
Exactly. So one of the things we were getting into is they have to know how far below the ground the subway actually runs. So there's inputs, there's information like that that's going to bear on the design. And I'm pretty sure in this case, if they actually design this, they're going to probably have to drive supports down into the ground to the sides of the subway, which is going to stretch this thing out a little bit. So those are some of the inputs you would say. Now, of course, the output in this project is somewhat obvious. It's a bridge which stands and functions well. But the output is not quite trivial, because in designing this bridge, what are some of your goals in a successful design?
To improve upon the current state.
What are some of the things you're going to be most concerned about if you had to list kind of highest priorities. In fact, when an agency like the government who would build such a bridge is going to evaluate proposals, they will typically articulate to you a certain set of constraints. They'll list these things, and they'll actually tell you what percentage of the overall proposal score those things contribute to, and then with your final proposal, you'll get a number, and they'll say, well, your proposal scored 67%, and it's based on how you addressed all these different categories. So what are some of these categories that they're going to look at?
Cost.
Time of construction, because time, this is going to disrupt traffic, more than likely. So time is really important. I think I sent a link about the subway project they're doing in Washington, D.C., where a big, big constraint was not to disrupt traffic. It's like doubling the cost of the project just to deal with that.
Conceptual evidence? Conceptual evidence?
Of what?
The bridge will work.
Well, what does it mean that a bridge will work?
It'll stand.
It'll stand for 1 minute?
It'll stand
for 1 day?
For a long time.
I think I might have mentioned this in that email, most of the bridges, you've heard a lot in the last year about the terrible shape all the bridges in Pennsylvania are in. From my understanding is most of these bridges have outlived their design constraints. So they're now kind of saying, well, these bridges were built poorly, but these bridges have actually lasted longer than they ever expected them to. So the companies that built them did their job. But now everyone's complaining because the bridges are crumbling. Well, they weren't meant to last so long. So when you talk about works, what you're really saying is we have to decide how long this bridge is expected to last. And as you know, over time, things like vibrations and settling of concrete and such is going to cause problems with the lifetime of the bridge and that kind of thing. So cost, we said lifetime.
Not disrupting access to the...
So you're missing one of the really obvious ones. No. Where is this bridge being built? Where are environmental engineers? Would they please raise their hands since they worry about this kind of stuff? Where is this bridge being built? Broad Street. If you wanted to build this bridge, what's going to be the single hardest part?
Having a staging area?
Nope.
Permit.
Where are you going to get a permit from? The city. Where are you going to get a permit from? Not Temple. There's a wonderful organization called something like the Architectural Board or some such thing. This is your worst nightmare. This is a group of people who have a board that's empowered to control any structure built on Broad Street.
Only on Broad
Street? Well, I don't know exactly what their power is, but I know specifically they control Broad Street. And what are they going to worry about?
What the environmental impact is.
Well, there's environmental impact, but even before environmental impact. This is actually an issue with the library that they've been trying to build, talking about building. In what sense of aesthetics? So there's actually a rule, as I understand it, there's a rule about Broad Street. One of the fundamental rules about Broad Street is that when you stand wherever Broad Street ends, like up at the... You have to be able to see an unobstructed view of downtown, City Hall.
Oh, my goodness. That's not going to fly.
Now, the design they showed me for this bridge makes it look like some kind of Martian spaceship or something. And my first thought was, you're going to have to cover that whole thing with this architectural stone because they're not going to go for that. In fact, if you look at the new dorm that they're building on Broad Street for the university, it's very modern looking, and it'd be interesting to hear the stories of how they got a permit for that, because my understanding is at Moore, south of Moore, you're kind of okay because there's a lot of new construction there. But north of Moore, you have to preserve the kind of brick style and all that kind of thing. So a big constraint in this is going to be the architectural issues as well as the environmental issues. There's also water runoff issues and things like that.
I think one of the street and that's it. Because
what?
I think you're going to get past them the other way.
So go under the street.
You're going to have to go under.
Well, that was actually talked about.
But then you get the subway.
Then you get the subway.
Get around it.
Okay, so inputs and outputs. You've got to capture those in your block diagrams. Now, the actual bridge itself, in terms of the function of this bridge, you're going to have some kind of mathematical model of the bridge. And that model will actually be kind of a multi-layer model. You may have models of how bolts shear and all this kind of stuff at the really low levels. At the higher levels, you'll have models of how beams work and all that kind of stuff. And all of that will be involved. You'll probably lay that out in some kind of CAD tool. You'll draw the structure, and then what's called the schematic capture part will figure out all that stuff for you. And now you'll have a model of you'll have a working model of the bridge. It'll have a lot of parameters associated with it, and those parameters will become some of your inputs. Things like the type of concrete you're using, the type of steel you're using, the type of bolts you're using, you know, the type of footings you're using, all that kind of stuff. And when you're done with all that, you'll have a pretty good functional model of the bridge. You'll be able to play all sorts of nice games. You'll be able to load it and see how it holds up and things like that. You'll be able to crash it and see when it crashes, how it's going to fall down, and all that kind of stuff. And that would actually be one type of block diagram that would be acceptable in this course. If you could describe that bridge to us in terms of all of the structural mechanics. And you could present that in some kind of block diagram. But that doesn't quite get your project executed. We have to now talk about the other side of the problem, which is how do you actually go about the process of executing this senior design project? What are the major tasks, and how do we go about synchronizing those major tasks? And that the output of that is what's called the work breakdown structure. And there's a lecture linked in the syllabus which gives you a great detail about that. There's actually two lectures from a government training class that was developed by a government contractor, really good detailed notes on how you go through that. I wanted to hit on a few issues today to help you sort of facilitate that process. So when you're looking at a project, and your ultimate goal is to develop a work breakdown structure, which means every task will be connected to every other task. Every person on the team will be fully loaded. Every task will be assigned to various people. You'll know how much time each task takes, how much time, overall time people are putting in, all that kind of stuff. To get to that state, what do we do? Well, let's go back to the beginning. When we're looking at our project and we need to produce that result, how do we get there? Where should we start? And now we're talking about the process of designing this bridge, or the process of executing this senior design project. And you all faced this at the beginning of first semester when you were trying to decide who on your team was going to do what tasks and all that kind of thing. So what's one of the more effective ways to start this process? If you can think back to, you know, first or second week of first semester when you had that blank sheet of paper in front of you.
Sometimes working backwards, I guess. You know what you're going to make, and then you kind of have to work out what everything is. Go backwards on.
Working backwards is one reasonable strategy.
List your assets.
Listing assets is a good start. Well, one of the techniques that we talked about last semester briefly, and I hope you've used from time to time, a good way to start this is to simply brainstorm. What you should do in any kind of project like this is just have a session where you list every possible task or issue you think is involved in that project. And someday when you go to formal project management training and you're paying $1,000 for this class, they'll tell you the same thing. Step number one is brainstorm. And what that consists of is just sitting down and enumerating as a team every possible task you think is involved. And when you go through that process, one of the key things in brainstorming is not to judge ideas, but to just write them down. Too often people will start arguing, oh, you're wrong, you're right. No, you don't do any of that. You just list all of your tasks, anything you think is relevant to the project. And that can include even simple things like buying office paper or going and getting beer or whatever, you know, you think is relevant. Because eventually you'll sort through all this stuff. Now, when you brainstorm about this, what are some of the things you need to think about? So assets was good. You need to think about what are the... In fact, that's a very important part of any project. Once you've figured out what you want to do, the next question is often, do you have the right people to do that? So listing your assets, listing your skills, listing your resources is important. You may not have the right computers to do the simulations. You may not have the right expertise in your group to do all of the tasks. We ran into that last semester. We had teams trying to do electronics that had no electronics people on their teams. That was a big problem. So what are some of the other things you should think about?
Time estimation.
Well, we'll put time is a little bit later. Right now we're just focusing on tasks. So where does this task list come from? What kinds of things go into that? Then let's think about that in the context of this bridge. What are some of the things they're going to have to get done if this bridge is going to come to life? We need someone to create the computer model. Okay. So this is where I think a lot of senior design teams get stuck. Because this is... Once we enumerate all these things, you'll begin to realize how much of this can be done in parallel. So, somebody mentioned concrete earlier. What are some of the things we're going to need to know to design this bridge about concrete?
Loading. What's the maximum load?
Do I just go to Home Depot and buy 80-pound bags of cement and mix them up and voila, I've got my bridge? How many people, I love talking about concrete because I've done a lot of concrete in my life. How many people have actually bought concrete? Ready mix? A few. Ready mix? Really? Electrical? How much? No, I mean, how many have actually bought cement that comes in a truck? Yeah, two. Three. Did you actually order that yourself?
You actually talk to the people you're ordering it from to determine what the usage is, what the best
product
is.
So, the first time I did this, when I went to do it for a house foundation, actually was the toughest time. They started asking, they knew more about it than I did, thank God. And they started asking me all sorts of questions. And I didn't even know these things were options with concrete. Things like how much fiber do you want mixed in, and how much, there was a agent that causes it to dry faster, which we didn't want to use because it was 90 degree heat in Mississippi. We didn't have a problem with it drying too fast. And after we did a little bit of this, he backed off, the person I was talking to, and he said, what? He said, what's your application? And I said, well, we're doing a house foundation. And he said, oh, you need a certain PSI.
3,000.
And then I said, oh, really? And he said, yeah, now if you were doing a road, you'd use this PSI. If you were doing a road for the state, you'd use this PSI. And, you know, you're having all these discussions. And I realized pretty quickly I needed someone who understood concrete. This project needs someone who understands concrete. Because there's a lot of issues here about what kind of concrete you're going to use, if you're going to use concrete at all. So that's an example of knowledge. One of the tasks in this project would be somebody has to go off and study concrete and bring that knowledge to the design. Some of you have seen this new building that's encasing McGonagall. You've seen some of the steel go up for that on Broad Street. Right? They've put up like 12 or 14 steel pillars. However many, and then they're going to tie them together. How much of the overall cost of that project And we're talking about building a complete building around McGonagall. How much of the cost of that do you think is accounted for by that steel?
Of the total building
cost. Just the material.
I think the material.
I nearly fainted when I saw this.
Less than
1%.
I say 15, 20.
I tell you, this team 16. The steel, just for framing this thing, is supposedly about 1/3 of the cost of the overall building. You've got like 20. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was astounding to me. And they had the design. They had to buy all this steel about a year in advance. That steel was purchased about a year ago. And I'm telling you, when you put in an order for like $20 million worth of steel, you lose a little bit of sleep over whether it's going to be the right length, whether it's going to be the right type, all that kind of stuff. So on this bridge project, someone's also obviously going to have to go off and study steel and understand a little bit about the trade-offs between concrete reinforced, steel reinforced concrete, and whatever else you do when you build these kinds of bridges. What are some of the other tasks you're going to need knowledge about before you can do this design?
Spans.
What?
Spans.
Someone should be an expert on the structural issues with these spans, so you know how far you're going to have to put supports and all that kind of stuff.
How deep the supports are going to be.
Scheduling.
In what sense? Scheduling is in any kind of construction project, the scheduling is a big issue.
You're going to have to be able to purchase materials at the right time, and if it's not going to have a staging area.
Exactly.
So
and you don't just have, you know, if you need 100-foot spans of steel, they don't just show up at 9 o'clock in the morning on a weekday, right? There's a whole bunch of issue with trying to get the stuff in and out of the site without disrupting traffic and those kinds of things. So a project like this will obviously have a scheduler. In fact, projects like this generally, on a team that does these kinds of proposals, you'll have a person whose entire career has been spent just doing scheduling. You'll love these people. They're called master schedulers, and they're a pain to work with. What are some of the other things? We talked about environmental impact. What happens when it rains? If you put this bridge over that intersection, what happens when it rains?
Runoff.
So someone's going to need to understand runoff. And it turns out that's actually a pretty serious issue because there's some constraints on how the city is dealing with runoff these days. Because Philadelphia's got a big problem with stormwater management. So all of these kinds of things can be researched in parallel. So that at some point you can bring all of this information together and then move to the next step of your design. So once you've got sort of these materials and that kind of stuff understood, and you actually do the design, what are some of the other things you're going to need knowledge about that fit within our design cycle?
Codes.
Codes are going to impact what aspects of the project? So those are constraints, but what happens when you actually want to prove to them you're compliant with these codes? How are you going to do that? There's going to be inspection, which you can think of as a form of testing. There's going to be what other kinds of things? What if you want to prove to them that this bridge is designed to support the right amount of loads?
Scale model.
Well, at least in simulation state, you're going to have somebody who understands when there's a spec, like some ANSI spec about pounds per square foot or whatever, however they do this, somebody's going to need to understand how you can implement that test in your simulation. as well as implement the test on some kind of model or an actual piece of the structure once the structure is built. So testing is another example. In a large project, knowledge about testing will be built at the beginning of the project in parallel with everything else. You'll have separate engineers, test engineers, who do nothing but deal with the problem of how you're going to test your design constraints and how those tests have to be constructed. Now, in a lot of projects in senior design, we tend to leave testing to the end, but that's another example of a task that you can be working on now, particularly in senior design 2. You should actually be working on that in senior design 1, and that's why we try to get you to write your test specifications in senior design 1. So let's look at so I'm going to put one of our teams on the spot here. I'm going to randomly pick a team here. So this is, actually let me go back to the, so this is the Pure Relief team, or project, and where's that, members from that team are here somewhere? So give me a 2-sentence elevator speech about what your project's about to the audience. All right, give me another sentence. You're going to do what?
I'm using a parabolic solar collector.
Right, so you're going to be heating water with a parabolic dish and then running it through a filtration process.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see what they came up with for a block diagram. Let me try that again. So here's that block diagram. I thought this was a pretty nice block diagram. It's actually not the kind of block diagram I would ever create, but I think that's good. I mean, it fits the project very nicely. It shows you the key elements of the process, and it shows you how they're connected, and it actually shows you a little bit about what some of the issues are in the project. And it's visually pleasing, which doesn't hurt. Now, you know, again, the reason we stress these kinds of things, because when you get out into your full-time jobs and you have to talk to your upper management about what you're doing, what they're paying you all sorts of money to do, 95% of the time, you're going to be showing them pictures of what you do. And block diagrams are one way we communicate with management about engineering. So this is a pretty nice block diagram. You look at this and you have a pretty good feel for the project. You feel like the team understands the project and the significant issues and things like that. Now, if I could ask the team, at what point last semester did you actually have this version, the version we're looking at now?
November.
And what version of this would you say it is? No, I mean, what, in terms of the number of block diagrams you made, this is like version 3, version 4?
Version
2. Version 2? Really? Okay. Yeah, they had version 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. Now, so it's a, this is a pretty good block diagram for a project of this type. So, questions about your block diagrams, about how you're going to describe your project in terms of its underlying components. Is everyone's crystal clear? All right, so this is an area where we need some improvement this semester, because I think we didn't quite get this done well last semester. This will all be part of your approach. In fact, we would expect the early part of your approach will include your diagram and a discussion of the system and those kinds of things. And then eventually we'll also expect to see schedules and the plan for, you know, how you've executed the project according to that schedule. Okay? All right, so I will see you next week.